following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
This is David X. Cohen, ex-executive producer of Futurama, and you are listening to The Nerdy Show.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hi, I'm Boar.
And this is our top 20 nerdy things of 2015.
Woo!
Yeah, this is our annual list where we take all of pop culture, all of human achievement that's happened this year, and arbitrarily rank it against each other for
absolutely no reason. Well, we just mishmash them together for what we think is the best reason to rank them higher or lower than each other thing.
It's nerd stuff. If it's nerdy, if it's geeky, then we're going to figure out how it slides into that scale and kind of mash them all into this 20-something lump.
If it's geeky, we'll judge it, we'll arbitrarily rank it, and we're presenting it to you.
Now, we're going to be mentioning a lot of stuff. We'll have links on the episode page, and we'll go into how this works in just a moment. It's been a really busy year of all kinds of stuff.
A lot of stuff has happened this year. It's been a really crazy one.
From both Nerdy Show and then also the nerd world at large. Things as weird and random as a Supreme Court justice peppering a ruling with references to Spider-Man. Megabots, of course, got funded to bring their giant robot battle to life, but that's happening next year.
Can't wait to see that, though.
Yeah. I mean, they basically...
Maybe that'll make it onto next year's list if it's cool enough.
They've assured it's got to be on the list next year. And we spoke to Megabots, actually, in one of my favorite interviews of the year. Along with other interviews like Bob Dolman, who wrote Willow, which is one of my favorite interviews ever, actually. We talked to Greg Weissman again, creator of Gargoyles. Anyway, back to other stuff. I mean, like, movies, The Avengers 2 was the kind of like, eh, but Ant-Man blew everybody's minds. Terminator Genesis, no one saw it, but you loved it. You loved it.
It was probably my favorite Terminator movie.
That is an insane thing you've just said.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people have given me crap about that, too, but I stand by it. It's a good movie, and if you're a true Terminator fan, you should see it anyway. It's too confusing for most people, I'll give it that.
And Jurassic World, you either love it or hate it, seems like, so...
Still haven't seen that.
Me neither. But all of our co-hosts who will be joining us throughout this episode, they've all got different opinions on it. But actually, Jurassic Park...
But let's not Jurassic talk World, to them about it.
It doesn't come up in this. We've talked about that far too much, really.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four was a total bomb. Gem, which was not as bad as everybody made it out to be, got kicked out of theaters, actually, within 2 weeks of being in there. But TV's been pretty flawless. Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Dark Matter, Man in the High Castle, and video games, lots of amazing stuff. Metal Gear Solid 5, Undertale took the indie world by storm in just the past few months.
Heard a lot of cool things about that. I haven't gotten a chance to check it out yet.
But. Yeah, I met the dude who did it at Camp Fangamer, and it seemed really neat, but wow, like, it has taken off. I'm so thrilled for him. I've never seen anything. I mean, I'm talking about, like, the last two conventions I was at, within a month of the game's release, had people challenging Homestuck for number of people cosplaying this game. Wow. I mean, it happened like lightning. It's crazy. A Splatoon, Rock Band, Guitar Hero returned and doesn't suck. It's actually kind of good. The Nintendo PlayStation was discovered this year, an actual functioning Nintendo PlayStation.
They find it in some attic or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Again, links to all this stuff. And also there was the news that Nintendo is bringing Nintendo to Universal Studios.
Nintendo Land.
Or perhaps Islands of Adventure here in Orlando.
Tentatively named Nintendo Land.
Yeah, tentatively. Most likely. We don't have a lot of details on that, but actually one of my favorite articles that we published this year was all of Nerdy Show kind of putting our heads together as to how they should do it.
Speculating what could happen, how they should do it.
Yeah, what currently existing attractions should be retrofitted into Nintendo attractions, stuff like that. There was a lot of good music this year, like the mind-blowing and officially licensed Final Fantasy VII remix album, Materia, Game Chop's amazing Splatoon's remix compilation, and the Proto Men, after a long quiet time, they released their long-awaited covers record, The Cover-Up, and some tracks from Act 3.
I've been waiting a really long time for Act 3. I'm excited.
Yeah, you and everybody, pal.
Yeah, really. I mean, we got a taste of it, but we want the rest!
I mean, it might come next year. It might.
And then maybe it'll make our list.
Yeah, none of this stuff that we're talking about, none of this stuff is on the list. None of it. But here's something that isn't on the list that we're just going to tell you isn't on the list straight up. Star Wars is not on the list. The Force Awakens, it's not on this list. It's not out yet. But aside from that, if we put Star Wars on the list, that would be one slot that something else didn't get. And it's Star Wars. It's probably going to be better than the prequels. It could be amazing. So one, we're not going to take the time to pass judgment on it and wait to delay this list. But two, just imagine it's on the list somewhere. Maybe ask us down the line where we'd place it if we were going to place it, and we'll tell you.
Yeah.
As for stuff with Nerdy Show, we launched Nerdy Show Theater, a dedicated channel for just our dramatic programming, like our tabletop role-playing shows. But we also launched our first scripted show, Liberty Critical Research, a sci-fi audio drama. And we did our 8-part miniseries, The Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program. And we remastered the first 2 episodes of Dungeons and Doritos, which is a long time coming. We launched the app for Nerdy FM, our streaming nerd music online station.
And it's so much more convenient than having to go to the website on the mobile browser and clicking around.
And I traveled too much this year, like way too much, an unhealthy amount. But some of the coverage was fantastic. I did extensive coverage of Star Wars Celebration. I went out to Camp Fangamer. There's, of course, our annual E3 report and coverage from San Diego Comic-Con, including the Miami Vice reunion, which a CBS representative told me we were the only people who covered that, which is really weird. But that happened. We also experimented in filming some of our episodes, including a discussion on DC Comics television shows, a debate between Nerdy Show Whovians and those who are not Whovians.
Anti-Whovians?
Dr. Detractors, you may say. And an interview with the WWF legend Brian Knobbs of the Nasty Boys, where Brandon and I actually got in the ring and wrestled him, or really, he wrestled us.
He wrestled you guys, for sure.
Which was a unique experience. You should definitely watch the video. It's I still can't believe it happened, really. It was very strange. And of course, there were also other instances where we punished ourselves for your entertainment, like our episode Food Crawl, where we ate a bunch of food, 13 restaurants in a row, and recorded the whole thing. And
I'm so glad that I didn't come with to that, because I would have been knocked out after like the second one.
It was an endurance test for sure. It was a lot of fun retrospectively. I can look back on it fondly. And the Eye of Argon Challenge, where a fan requested that we read some of the most notoriously bad fantasy writing in history, which we read around a roaring fire. So here's how this thing's going to work. We got 20 things to get through, so we're going to give everything 3 minutes. We've been doing this for the past few years of our top 20 list. And on this occasion, we will be playing not just your regular iPhone sound, but actually a ringtone written by Heaven Pegasus, who you may remember under the moniker Mouth's Cradle, their album Sakura placed in our top 20 last year. So you're going to hear this little tune, Cheeky Hello, from the Cheeky Ringtone series, and that's how you'll know it's time to shut the fuck up.
I imagine we'll probably talk over it a little bit, but yeah, we'll try to keep it as succinct as we can.
Yeah, and to start us off, we're going to be doing some superlatives during this whole discussion.
Special things that we couldn't fit into the rankings.
That in some ways exist beyond it, yeah. in a side category.
They were outstanding in some fashion.
Yeah. It's something a little bit more than a runner-up, let's say that.
Yeah.
So as evidenced by this one we're going to start with, and I'll set the timer, this is a Nerdy Achievement Award for all time, Gravity Falls. The show started in 2012, and it ends, actually, I found out recently, the final episode is an hour-long special next year, but the ending is, really should be this year. That's how we're going to call it.
Their release schedule is so wacky.
Yeah, it's been pretty fucked, actually. But an immensely popular show and an incredible show. I like to call it Twin Peaks for kids. It's a paranormal comedy set in the Pacific Northwest with 2 kids staying with their uncle for the summer in the town of Gravity Falls.
Grunkle Stan.
Yeah, old Grunkle Stan, where things are just not quite right.
I was really skeptical before I watched the show. I was like, oh, that looks stupid. It's on Disney, whatever. But immediately, first episode, that show just drags you in and it does not let go.
Yeah, and the reason this achievement is happening is that they, as sort of an unprecedented thing for an animated series launched by a company like Disney, it has a finite end. Alex Hirsch, who created it and voices Grunkle Stan and Seuss,
he fought for the ending to happen.
Because it's making a lot of money.
So yeah, they want it to continue. They want to milk it for everything it's worth, but he fought for it and he wanted the story to end because it has an ending. And I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Like, more power to him.
It's one beautiful summer where the kids have transformative experiences of many kinds. And it's incredible. It's been amazing so far. So at this moment, we've seen everything but the hour-long season finale, which is going to happen as per Gravity Falls' completely awful release schedule. I don't know how they've been as successful as they have with releasing the way they have been. Early 2016, which could be any time from January to March.
Yeah.
but it's been incredible. The finale so far has been incredible. Weirdmageddon. And last year, their episode, Little Gift Shop of Horrors, actually placed 14th on our 2014 Top 20 Nerdy Things list. That one episode was such a standout presence of nerd credibility, we had to tip our hats.
It's worth so many tips of the hat.
Yes, yeah, so many. Therefore, the Nerdy Achievement Award. If you haven't seen it, please do. You can watch it all via many streaming outlets for current television. You can buy it all on Amazon digitally or whatever. But do it. If you like Twin Peaks, if you like X-Files.
If you like to be entertained.
Yeah. Do you like sci-fi mystery fun? Do it. You have nothing to lose. Gravity Falls is an all-ages show, really. And Disney's got a hell of a track record now with Pickle and Peanut. Like they're doing good television animation right now that is not necessarily for kids.
Yeah, definitely watch it. Oh, no.
And we did it. So that's it. Let's move on to number 20.
I'm going to start the clock.
And we got...
Oh, God, there's actually a clock.
Yeah, 3 minutes, man.
Oh,
Brandon
shit.
Is in the room.
I don't know anything.
Yes, yeah. You do.
Number 20, John Hendren pranks headline news.
A little bit of background. In September, Edward Snowden joined Twitter. And there was a big brouhaha because, you know, government secrets and so on. So Headline News, which used to be CNN2, turns out I looked into it. They pointed out the governor of New York tweeted at Jack, the founder of Twitter, to shut down the Snowden account because he's a terrorist and a traitor. But instead of getting at Jack, they got at Fart.
Which I still am a little confused.
Yeah, how did they do that?
Why they did
that?
Well,
the thing is that John Hendren, a.k.a. Fart, is a Twitter celebrity. He has a lot of followers, so
he's also a very popular writer.
They just
for
looked
something,
at his follower number,
maybe.
Yeah, but he's also a popular writer for something awful.
Yeah, he's been doing something awful writing back in 2005, yeah. And he's the thought lord of the DevOps movement, and he's a generally funny guy. Here's a tweet of his that I really like from early 2014. Kicked out of The Hobbit for shouting "Now we're Tolkien" every time something happened.
What an asshole.
He's awesome.
This is like a legit real life. He's an IRL troll.
Well,
someone needs to shoot him.
You assume that happened in real life. It could just have been a tweet.
I mean, yeah, but it could easily... I mean, after watching the video of the Headline News thing, I mean, that is probably something he really did.
But here's what happened. Headline News invited him on to talk as a Snowden supporter. And instead of talking about Edward Snowden, he talked about Edward Scissorhands.
The entire time.
On live news. And he was really deadpan about it, really subtle
about
it.
Yeah, he was just nonchalantly defending
really serious
Edward
about
Scissorhands.
It. And when I watched this video for the first time, I'm like, no, this is fake. Because the person asking the questions, I think her name's Yasmin, and she was not like...
She wasn't picking
she wasn't
up on it at
flinching,
all.
Or if she was, she wasn't letting on. So I was like, okay, this happened and someone must have edited this video later. So it's just like a fake video that I'm watching. But I've checked multiple websites. Cab, you've told me it's not a fake.
It's not fake. It's
actually
real.
Happened. Yeah. And that the reporter is just that good. She didn't flinch at all. You know, they're saying, okay, well, do you think it was right for
I
him?
Don't think he's a monster just yeah. because he's got scissors where his fingers should
scissors
be.
Scissors for hands, you know? It's not his fault. And it's like, do you think it was right that he fled to Russia? It's like, well, he had no choice after he was chased out of town. Where else was he going
to
go?
He just wanted to make topiaries for everyone.
Yeah, it's like, just because he was created on a mountaintop by Vincent Price, it does not make him a monster. And she's just like asking him legit questions about Edward Snowden, and he's talking about Edward Scissorhands. And there's like, it's really confusing for me to watch and a little uncomfortable because she's not... She is must be the most amazing reporter that channel has, because she's not flinching. She is not relenting. She's just going right back to Edward Snowden questions. Her eyes don't even move. Like, what the fuck is he talking about? Nothing. So I was just thinking, like, this video is a fake. Maybe Snopes will say otherwise.
Definitely a big tip of the hat to that guy, though.
Yeah.
Was that 3 minutes?
That was 3 minutes, shit. Man. Yeah. Hats off to you, Fart. It's truly amazing. It definitely tops that time you got the lead singer Smash Mouth to eat all those eggs.
Totally outlandish.
Which may be a loaded statement, but I'll link to where you can find out more of this dude's amazing exploits and this incredible video on this episode's page.
Now for this next one, we're keeping Brandon around, because number 19 is Fallout 4.
Yeah, it's pretty good, and that's all I'm going to say about it. I'm done with this comment. No, it's...
He drops the mic.
Yeah, done.
It's okay, click.
It's, the reason I think it's so nerdy that I like it is because the science and technology in the game is so ridiculous, non-possible, completely dangerous shit that they were dreaming about back in like 30s, 40s, and 50s. It's kind of like those old science fiction comic books or movies where it's like, if you get too close to a nuclear reactor, you're going to become a monster. Or they're using ray guns and they have cars powered by like nuclear fusion. So it's just ridiculous technology. Robot maids, like shit that just won't actually happen that they thought were going to happen by the 80s or 90s.
I mean, it's comedy combined with a certain degree of actual horror. Like, the landscape is awful,
it's
terrifying.
It's asinine horror. It's like ridiculous horror that wouldn't actually happen.
But then in that landscape is entrenched with nerdy Easter eggs. For example, we've actually got a thread on the forums going on right now where folks are posting things they found. Max Acree found the final scene from Jaws recreated with a dead body dressed like Quint and a dead mutant dolphin.
I didn't find that.
Also, supposedly you can find Cheers.
Yeah, Cheers is there.
Complete with the skeletons of the cast members.
There's some Sons of Anarchy references in one of the jails. There's a character named Jake Reds instead of Jake Blues from Blues Brothers. And then one of the deepest cuts, as Max says, there's some random piece of electronic junk that has a very obvious serial number on it. And somebody found out it was a registration number for the Nostromo from Alien.
Just a random computer with a serial number on it.
Some electronic junk.
What the hell? I need to pay more attention. I'm too like cramped for time, so I'm like rushing and doing everything. But like,
it's hard to pay that much attention.
There are a lot of really tiny details in that game. A lot of them are Easter eggs, actually, if you do some research on them. And I have not spent any time doing research on them at all because I don't have that time.
I really want to find that Jake Blues outfit. I'm sure like every other piece of normal clothing in that game, I'm just going to not wear it because if I don't have armor, I will die. You know, that's bad. But anyway, like Fallout, it's such a beautiful balance of comedy and horror. It's steeped in not just a whole bunch of radiation, but also a lot of nerdiness to put together this massive explorable world. So, go play it if you haven't, and lose all of your life to it. It's warm, tender, radioactive embrace. Moving on to the next item. Number 18. We got John on the phone. Hey, John.
Hey.
If we got John, then it must be SciTech, because we're talking about the HoloLens.
HoloLens.
Now, this is Microsoft's answer to augmented reality, and it's not out yet, but they did unveil it this year, have a lot of public showings, and the world is getting generally hype. We gave augmented reality by itself a top 20 award years ago in our first top 20.
Just the
list.
Concept?
Kind of.
Hey, but, you know, don't call it augmented reality because Microsoft will probably get after you for it, right?
Right. What is the deal? Why is HoloLens different from augmented reality?
Because it isn't. Because the term augmented reality has gotten on the periphery of people's knowledge as horrible phone apps that don't really work that well and are basically just UIs in space.
Is that why they want to distance themselves, you think?
I'm pretty sure that that's a pretty big part of it. The amount of every single article I read, like very few of them even actually mention augmented reality. The ones that seem to be even closer up to Microsoft are like, oh, mixed reality, which is basically augmented reality. It's like the same damn continuum.
So HoloLens, if you've somehow missed it, is a headset that lets you see both the real world and then stuff superimposed into it at a insane level, the likes of which the hopes and dreams of augmented reality all said were going to happen. So though for marketing purposes or something, they're not calling it augmented reality. It is most assuredly augmented reality. It's just the next phase of it.
Yeah, in the long run, I think augmented reality is way more exciting of an idea than virtual reality, in my opinion anyway. But I feel like we're so close to virtual reality being a big thing that right now I'm more hyped about VR. But in the long run, I think something like HoloLens will be something that is in every household for sure.
I think it's going to be like a multifunction printer thing. I mean, you know, you're going to have your fax machine, then you're going to have your printer, and then all of a sudden it's going to go and just blur into one another, and then you're not even going to be able to distinguish the two anymore.
That's probably a fair assumption. I mean, ultimately, it's the technology is going to boil down to at what point do we start having contact lenses or surgery or something to completely be able to superimpose
or a port in the back of your head.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, even before that, how hard is it really to ultimately be able to do a full virtual? I mean, I guess my point is if you effectively blacked out the lenses, then you would already be in VR anyway.
Oh, sure. Yeah, totally. They could definitely do both things in one device in the future.
It'll take them a little bit of time, but, you know, like, I don't really see it as being impossible by any stretch.
Well, the reason we have this thing on the list is because of all the opportunities it presents as a really intensely functional futuristic device. So what's your favorite stuff that you've seen with the HoloLens so far?
The NASA thing was obviously really, really cool on Mars with the lander. I mean, that was near VR, but not. The whole point there is like VR, you can't walk around, right? Because, you know, you'll like slam into a wall. And so this is able to allow you to not slam into a wall, but also walk around on Mars and, you know, collaborate with a NASA scientist to actually examine rocks. I mean, like the applications are as limitless as augmented reality was when we had it on the list before.
True.
Except it's actually like real. And that's the crazy part about this. I mean, what? They started premiering this in January. Like, we didn't know anything about it. And all of a sudden, it's like augmented reality is a real thing.
Basically, like, yeah.
Yeah, they claim they've been working on it in secret for years or something. I think they only said 3 years.
And I mean,
though.
You know, ton of bricks just out of nowhere. Unity support. You know, they're on a 5-year conquest plan.
Well, that's time. We'll see what happens with the HoloLens. But either way, it is definitely a crowning achievement of tech in 2015. But John, why don't you stay on with us? Because let's talk about the next topic as well. It's somewhat different, but number 17, the DC comic book, Prez.
God. Oh, my God.
It's one of my favorite books out this year. It's very, very, very distinct in the comic book landscape of 2015.
It is really like a new Transmet for like the hyper near future.
Yeah, no.
I mean, it's just nutty.
If you're not familiar with the word Transmet, that's short for Transmetropolitan, Warren Ellis's seminal near future cyberpunk, I guess, would be the best closest genre comic book from the early 90s. And
which featured heavily with bad politics and technology's role. Basically, it's like a foreign landscape, but still all believable and, you know, perceivable. It's really about like ridiculousness as an art form, practically. But what really got me about Prez is that every single thing that happens in there is basically already happening today, so much so that I almost find it unfunny with how horrible it is.
Prez is the creation of Ben Caldwell and Mark Russell. It's actually a spin on a 1970s DC book about Prez, the first teen president. Whoa! And it was a short-run comic, God. Really goofy. People have made jokes about it everywhere. There's even a reference to it in Dark Knight Returns. And this is a modern reimagining outside of the regular DC canon that is satire of the world we live in right now, but in a kind of like more complex and more interesting even than Idiocracy kind of
That's
lens.
Where my mind was immediately going when you were starting with that sentence. I was like, is he going to say Idiocracy?
Right. But it's way more layered than Idiocracy could have offered up. The best thing I can compare it to is like Transmet mashed up with certain more political parts of Howard the Duck.
Like Transmet watching Trump.
It's just a horrible world of holographic pop-up ads everywhere and big corporations.
Gross injustice.
Gross injustice. There's scenes of Muslim kids getting gunned down in streets by fat bros eating snacks in beanbag chairs in America.
Specifically, Cool Ranch Doritos.
And so it's like very intense, very like unsettling, but it's also a satire. For example, there's the big pharmaceutical company is called Pharmaduke, and it's a dog with a syringe in his mouth.
Pharmaduke.
The main character is Beth Ross, and she's elected as president via Twitter in the year 2036.
In part thanks to Anonymous.
I think we need to actually move to the Twitter voting model.
She becomes internet famous because of a viral video where she gets her hair caught in the deep fryer at the fast food company she works at. And
it's a good way to rise to fame.
Yeah.
More legitimate than Paris Hilton.
But that's the time. But I guess we'll close in saying it's amazing. You should totally read it. It was 6 parts. It was part 1. It just wrapped up. It's going to be collected early next year. And there's more to come in the final 6-part story arc. And hello, I'm Carl, the end of life bear. Would you like some marijuana? That's the thing that happens.
Yeah, that's also modeled after a thing from Japan, one of their crazy robots. I mean, it's like everything in that's real. The whole thing. The whole thing might as well just be canon for reality.
Are you talking about the death robot? The bear that hugs you and gives you a lethal injection?
Yeah, that's like a real thing.
Ew, I mean, what? Oh, God. Yeah, so, I mean, everything...
It's Dr. Kevorkian bot.
Everything in Prez is based on reality, but it's a funnier version of it, and it's a distillation of the future-present landscape of 2015 in this really great sci-fi. Coming in at number 16, we got Brandon back here.
Yay, I'm Brandon.
Hi, Brandon.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Brandon, how much do you enjoy playing Rush songs in Rock Band?
Here's the problem, is you can't really play a Rush song, you just try. And usually you fail if you're on the hardest drum difficult. Basically, you're not playing Rush in Rock Band unless you're playing the drums.
Right.
I don't care what you're saying. You
might
expert,
say
pro.
That Neil Peart is one of the greatest drummers of all time.
Neil Peart or Pert, however you pronounce it.
It's Peart.
I don't care what anyone else says about Keith Moon, because I still think Neil is better, because I've seen him play a row of 50 drums in a circular motion around him, and he just spins and plays all of them. I ain't seen Keith Moon do that. He's also dead, so whatever. So you beat him there, too. Whatever. Guy's a nutter.
Well, Neil Peart, he's got a lot going on. He may know something about MKUltra mind control, as we discussed in our nerdy show Declassified episode.
Methodical.
He may also possess magic enchantment powers because number 16, Rush fan Jennifer Morrow uses Neil Peart's drumsticks to win Jeopardy.
So the funny thing is Alex Trebek is from Ontario and Rush is from Ontario.
Yeah.
And Alex Trebek usually is an emotionless game show hosting machine. Like he shows no emotion. He might show kind of slight interest. Like, yes, that's great.
He tells jokes, but they're really weird.
But when she tells the story and like she pulls out Neil Peart's drumsticks and he's just like, oh my God, that's awesome. And I'm like, I've never even seen him excited at all in like 30 years.
Here's what happened. This girl, I'm watching Jeopardy. And
did you watch it when it actually happened?
Yeah, I did. Cool. It was insane because Jennifer Morrow has way more energy than the average Jeopardy contestant, like by a long shot. When the bio segment comes up, she's like, I was always inspired by tales of knights in shining armor who would ride into battle with a token of favor from somebody they admired. So I thought I would do that here. I'm a huge fan of the Canadian prog rock trio Rush, and I went to one of their concerts a while back.
Did she like hold up a sign that says like need token of favor from
It said,
to carry in the
battle? She went to the front row and said, maybe on Jeopardy, request token of favor to carry in thy honor.
Oh yeah, Neil Peart was like, have my drumsticks.
Yeah.
Because he's like a huge fan of Jeopardy. I heard. Like an amazing fan of Jeopardy.
He fucking gave her drumsticks. And then when she's telling the story, she has a like this leather pouch.
It's like a sword sheath that she pulls out both of the drumsticks. And that's like everyone in the audience is dead silence. I'm cracking up, but it's like everyone in the audience is like, ooh.
And then she's killing the game, does double Jeopardy, and the amount she picks.
She could have done way higher. Like
she could have, but she did 21-12.
Which is their, like, what, 1976 album, I think.
Yeah,
which
it's the, like,
their best
their album? Concept. Well, I don't know if I wouldn't call it their best album, but it's the Rush concept album. It's the only real, like, heavy concept record they've
done. And she won, we should add.
She won twice. Yeah.
She failed at some point, I'm assuming. Did she quit and bow out? I don't know what happened to her.
No, she almost got a third time, but she got robbed. But it was incredible. Nerdy game show, classic rock nerd. I've never seen a performance like that on Jeopardy ever. Like, she killed it.
She was actually beaten by someone who's carrying around a token of favor from Kenny Rogers. Could have been chicken. It could have been part of his beard.
Yeah, they just went to Kenny Rogers Roasters beforehand.
Do those exist anymore?
I have no idea.
Not in Florida.
They just saved the old chicken bones.
Hey,
I have a lock of his beard.
Do you know what the slogan was for Kenny Rogers Roasters?
No, I don't.
It's the wood that makes it good.
No wonder they did so well.
Oh, God. I actually really liked Kenny Rogers Roasters better than KFC. It was the wood, guys. It was. KFC
and
didn't
it made
use
it
wood.
Good.
Well, Jennifer, you rock. Well done. And that's time. Moving on to number 15.
Ooh, what's number 15?
Number 15 is none of your concern.
That's my favorite band. So we're talking about my band, None of Your Concern. That is my band I've started. It's also my favorite.
It's a concept band where they all wear nun habits.
Are you being serious right now? Or are you just making up some
shit? We wear nun outfits, and when people go, what are you all about, guys? Because they're British. And you go, none of your concern.
Governor.
Are you guys improving right now?
No, or, none or of is your a real concern. Thing? Put a bottle
you,
in your bottle.
If you ask if someone's improving, it derails the improving. What's wrong with you?
All right, I wanted to derail it because I wanted it to come back to reality.
All right, number 15. We're joined by Jess. Hey, Jess.
Hello.
The clock has started. Here's number 15 on the list, Chamber Band's record, Careers. This record is a concept record loosely inspired by The Hunger Games. Now, you may remember Chamber Band as placing very highly in our top 10 of the top 20 of 2013, I want to say. Yeah, 2013, with their debut record, Deities, which was an album about the world of Dungeons & Dragons, but not in any kind of like narrative sort of way, more about experiences, feelings. And that's what they've done here with Careers. I'm not being eloquent at all, actually.
I was like, so the last one was a concept album, and this one is a concept album?
Yeah. But they're all
I was waiting for you to describe it as a rock opera so we could make some sort of a distinction, but
no, it's loose. It's that the songs are ultimately about really human emotional stuff, but they have kind of a backdrop, a launching point rooted in pop culture. In the first record it was Dungeons and Dragons, and in this one it's The Hunger Games. There's a couple actual references to things here and there, but I know nothing about Hunger Games, and this record, I love it.
They had a few references in song titles, but otherwise, yeah, they're not singing about Katniss or anything. I think it's really well done, and I really, really like their cover of One Headlight. I just thought it was absolutely beautiful and awesome.
Yeah, and we did an episode not so very long ago where we talked to Chamber Band, and they actually did a blow-by-blow through the whole album, taking us through all the various experiences, any narrative elements that were in it. It was a really cool explorative episode. And I like to compare them to kind of like the nerdier Decemberists. The Decemberists are already pretty nerdy, but Chamber Band takes it to another level where if you're a fan of what they're talking about, you can kind of get off to the fan nuances there. But ultimately, they're just making really good music that happens to have a nerdy slant that anybody can relate to. It makes them a lot more universal than most nerd musicians out there.
Yeah, and this album was actually even kickstarted. So they put it all on Kickstarter. You know, we funded it. And they went out to the woods and they wrote and recorded everything, which I think is just a really awesome and transparent way to do it, too.
Yeah, they went to this really cool recording studio that was like a converted barn in the woods in the middle of nowhere.
Okay, that's a little bit more normal than like, oh, then they wandered out into the woods.
And, and there's time, but I entreat you to please check out the episode itself because it makes a lot more sense there.
The album is also on Spotify, so really easy listening if you subscribe to that service.
True. We're going to give you a little taste here. We're going to play a track. All their original material is wonderful, but we're actually going to play one of the two covers from the record. Not One Headlight, but In the Coliseum, a cover of a marginally obscure Tom Waits song. And we're playing this because we actually debuted the video for this song on Nerdy Show. So this is In the Coliseum, originally by Tom Waits, performed by Chamber Band on their album Careers, coming in at number 15 on the top 20 nerdy things.
Bye.
Jess, why don't you stick around? Let's talk about number 14.
All right. 14 introduced my new favorite superhero, who I'm maybe a little bit obsessed with, in Spider-Gwen, but this is Spider-Verse.
Spider-Verse is an event at Marvel. It started in November of 2014, but most of the action happened in 2015 and is carried over beyond the scope of the regular event. It was rooted predominantly, not surprisingly, in the Spider-Man titles, but did spill out a little bit. And the idea, the core idea is, it's a multiversal Spider-Man catastrophe, let's say, where there's a group of entities, and it's all with a bunch of convoluted, kind of on purpose backstory, a bunch of entities that eat spiders, like spider spirits.
Spider phage.
Spider totems.
Sure.
They absorb the life force energy of people from across dimensions that have spider totems. I know that sounds dumb. That sounds really dumb. Trust me, it is just a plot device for a completely bonkers event that is the most beautiful tribute to the legacy of Spider-Man, basically.
So this is some sort of a comic book thing you're talking about.
Yes, it is a was that not clear before?
I wasn't 100% sure.
We're talking about Peter Parker from the main Marvel Universe, 616, teaming up with Peter Porker the Spider-Ham, teaming up with that one-time Doc Octopus inhabited Peter's body, teaming up with Spider-Man Noir, teaming up with none other than Spider-Man, the Japanese live-action redonkulous thing you've probably seen from YouTube that rides around in a big leopard mech. Like, that's canon now.
It's so great. It's so great.
Okay.
It is the ultimate tribute to Spider-Man done by Dan Slott, who's a longtime writer of the series and has been consistently killing it for years, but holy shit, Spider-Verse. And it did, as Jess said, created Spider-Gwen, an alternate reality version of Gwen Stacy, who became the spider and Peter died.
Oh, this is the source of that.
Yes.
Oh, yep. Okay. Because I've been seeing a lot about Spider-Gwen, but I didn't know exactly where it came from.
Yeah. And this thing digs deep. I'm talking about there's big stories, there's small stories, all kinds of stories from the Spider-Verse. You can buy most of it in just one book, actually. They have the newspaper strip that Stan Lee wrote for years. They have the Indian Spider-Man, who was like published in a one-off comic book in India in 2004, is a main character in this, and he's really cool. Of course, there's all the TV appearances. It doesn't happen on screen, but they do mention both Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield. And that's time, but Spider-Verse, amazing. You should check it out. If you love Spider-Man at all, just pick up the collection. It is pricey. It's a hardback. But it is worth it. It is a one-and-done comics event that will fucking delight you.
And I think it might be on our nerdy gift guide, so...
Yes, it is.
Plug!
Before we carry on with the list, it's time for another superlative. We've got Doug joining us, and we're going to talk about easily the greatest geek film of the year, Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, man. What a movie. I don't know if the movie in and of itself is nerdy. There's nerdy elements to it, like post-apocalyptic...
We did debate this quite a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you rate something that is the progenitor for things that are irrefutably nerdy?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of LARPing and costumes and cosplay that comes out of Mad Max, so I guess
Furiosa alone took the world by storm.
Yeah. So there's definitely a nerdy response to
it. And it is sci-fi.
Yeah, but it is meant to be a mainstream movie.
Yeah, and it was gloriously so. I mean, George Miller resurrecting his own movie franchise and doing it in such a big way and having it be successful. I mean, I'm used to most nerd movies tanking in the theater and having to recover in DVD sales.
Yeah.
Cough Pacific Rim.
This movie really had no right to be as awesome as it was. I mean...
What? No right?
What do you mean no right?
Look at the track record for every other... big movie franchise that is trying to be resurrected, and it's always like mediocre at best.
This one is just
every now and then they have to get one right.
I guess so. This one has literally set the bar for any other movie franchise that's trying to make another comeback. I was not expecting it to be as good as it was, and I mean, what else can I say about it other than movie of the year? It may be better than Star Wars. It may be movie of the year.
It's hard to imagine Star Wars being more artful than Fury Road.
Or consider
for
it. Because, I mean, like, Fury Road, they've been planning it for years, whereas we've literally covered the entire gestation period of The Force Awakens.
We know for a fact they were strapped for time to create Force Awakens.
Yeah, whereas Fury Road was sheer force of will.
And a triumph of the will.
Yes, indeed.
So if you haven't seen Fury Road, please see Fury Road. It is truly majestic, and its nerdiness, well, you need only look to post-apocalyptic sci-fi. It's it in the biggest way possible. Mad Max was always one of the cornerstones of that, and this is, it's the best Mad Max movie, I feel.
It's tough to argue.
Coming in number 13, a guy who built a functional Mjolnir. It can only be lifted by those who are worthy.
Worthy meaning the guy who programmed his thumbprint into it.
Yeah, and functional meaning, I don't know if you could actually hammer anything with it.
It looks hefty enough, you totally could. Though
I think
it might,
you could beat somebody's face with it pretty hard.
You could, but you would damage it.
You would damage it, but you would succeed in hammering.
Yeah.
And it may even, depending on if something went wrong with the electromagnet inside of it, it may even,
Have sparks in the... could electrocute somebody.
You might be able to take down some sort of a vehicle in an unexpected way just by activating it.
That is true. He puts an electromagnet inside the hammer, and he puts it on like a sewer manhole cover and on other pieces of metal, and he challenges people to come over and say,
any large metallic object out in public.
Yeah. Try to pick it up. So this guy, Alan Pan of the YouTube channel Sufficiently Advanced, he devised this electromagnet with a fingerprint identifier on the handle so only he can pick it up. I mean, is it a little self-involved to say that you're the only one who's worthy? Certainly.
Well, he built it. I don't know whose thumbprint would do it. I just went out there and signed it.
Certainly, Mjolnir could only be wielded by Odin, and only Thor could wield it because Odin allowed
it
to.
Anyone who's worthy. Anyone who's worthy of the power of Thor can pick it up. I mean, Vision picked it up.
Yeah, if he thinks somebody else is worthy, he could program their fingerprint in there. It'd be sort of like, you know, passing the torch.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the first video was out at Muscle Beach. Weirdly, he didn't get any muscle dudes to pull it, but I think there's probably some reasons why. And
if he attached it to a manhole cover, I imagine that some of the muscle dudes just went over there and just pulled it right open.
Because in a later video, Thor himself did exactly that. He took it to Comic-Kazi, Stanley's comic convention in Los Angeles, and had cosplayers go at it. And it was fucking hilarious to see, like, green-painted She-Hulk trying to get this thing up. And he actually did a modification. He made it so 1 in 10 had a chance for it to actually lift.
That's cool.
And weirdly, the track record was generally, if it was a Deadpool, it lifted.
Of course.
But Jack Thor, he lifted the Mjolnir, but he lifted it because he took that manhole cover with him.
Damn.
And then Alan waited in line, and Stan Lee signed the Mjolnir at the thing. So That's pretty cool. Well done, Alan. Well done.
Better have included Stanley's thumbprint on that. You better have.
All right, so we're moving right along. Doug, why don't you stay right where you are? Let's talk about Other Space.
Yeah, this was a surprisingly good show.
It was. It was surprisingly good. If you haven't checked out Other Space, you should. And
you need to immediately.
Yeah, you really do need to immediately. And likely you can do it for free, though we'll get into why we don't know the uncertain future of Other Space. But in a nutshell, Other Space is all your favorite sci-fi comedies rolled up in one, in a beautiful 8-part debut season.
Which was way too short. I wanted more.
I wanted more, too.
I want more now.
It's like Galaxy Quest, sort of done like a workplace comedy, if that makes any sense.
The basic premise of the show is almost like Voyager, except for...
Well, it's actually almost entirely Red Dwarf, except for the millions of years.
I disagree. I think it's like Next Gen.
Because it's about a crew of, let's say, Starfleet who get sucked into a wormhole that spits them out into, not the Delta Quadrant, but actually another universe.
And that's right. Why it's another space.
Oh. Yeah. So they don't know if there's aliens to contact or what. It's both a horrifying and exciting prospect, and this crew is really mismatched.
Yeah. Some crazy people.
Crazy not people.
Yeah, exactly. I love everything about it. And I think you and I were exposed about the same time, and I remember...
Yeah, one beautiful night where Kay from Nerdy Show said, hey, have you guys watched this? And we're like, no. And then
we're just immediately in love with this show.
Play the next one!
Yeah. And the reason we were like, no, is because the creative force behind it, the creator, is Paul Feig, the guy who does Bridesmaids, is doing the forthcoming Ghostbusters movie. But I fucking hate Bridesmaids. I know it's well-loved. And the Ghostbusters thing, because I hate Bridesmaids, I'm very uncertain about it.
Other Space did give me a little bit of hope on it because these characters had a good dynamic. Like, they all fit in that world.
And they were all consistently funny. Like, every episode was really great.
I loved it. It actually made me think, I have totally got this guy all wrong. He's doing stuff maybe for people that aren't me, but he did a show for me now, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. I really, really want to send him a gimbal, though. Because every single shot in that show is like shaky cam. And it drives me a little bananas, but the show's content is so good that I overlook it.
Now, it debuted on Yahoo Screen, which is the platform that Yahoo, debuted also this year with the final season of Community, or potentially final season of Community anyway. And Yahoo Screen lost millions of dollars. No one watched it. You know why? Because it was Yahoo. The content on it was good. Season 6 of Community was amazing. Other Space was amazing.
Well, there's just so many different streaming services that are trying to compete right. with each other right now.
And also, I mean, Yahoo made it hard to find for me. Like, I tried to have it play on my TV without having, like, a, you know, a game system attached right. to it, and I couldn't do it. And I had to do it in browser, and I didn't want to watch it on my computer. I want to watch it on a big TV.
Exactly.
The show also has a lot of nerd cred to it, not just because it's a sci-fi, but it has a lot of MST3K activity in it, in that Joel Hodgson is a character named Zalian, and Trace... I'm probably going to butcher his last name, but Beaulieu, the original voice of Crow, plays the robot Art. So.
I freaking knew it. Yeah. I knew that. I was about
that
to
makes
say.
So much sense.
Yeah.
You didn't recognize him?
I didn't make that connection, but just, now that I'm thinking about it, yes.
I thought they were just taking awesome. Inspiration. I didn't think they actually got him.
No, that's actually them. So,
that's hilarious.
And now, I mean, though the future of Other Space is uncertain, because Yahoo Screen is dead.
Oh, man, I hope it just gets picked up by anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But MST3K, as of this episode's release, has had a successful Kickstarter and is coming back. So those cool. guys are going to be busy anyhow. And the show, it's extremely derivative.
Help
extremely
us,
derivative of lots of things, but it is wonderful. You've got to check out Other Space.
And get worked up about it and help a second season happen.
And if you find someplace that sells collarballs, let us know.
Got to have a set of collarballs for every outfit that you wear.
Coming in at number 11, let's get Jess back on the line. Hey, Jess.
Hello again.
Let's talk about Japan's first robot-operated hotel. Maybe the world's first robot-operated hotel? It's got to be.
Probably. Japan's always first with the robots.
If somebody's going to have a robot hotel first, it's going to be Japan.
Yeah. And did they ever? These guys took it to a ridiculous degree. Now, we know Japan has lots of novelty hotels. You want to sleep in, like, basically a coffin for, you know, space reasons at a reasonable price.
Why would you not?
Right. Why not? But in this case, they're slashing prices because there's no hotel staff. There's just robots.
They fired everybody and they're passing the savings along to you. Now go talk to the robot Velociraptor.
He's not joking. There is a robot concierge Velociraptor. Have you seen this?
I mean, isn't that all of our dreams coming true, to be checked into a hotel by a Velociraptor? I mean, before it rips our faces off, but you know, it's cool.
He's got like a kind of vaguely British accent, and it's super weird. It's very self-aware, obviously, because of the raptor. But hey, if you want to talk to also a creepy robotic Japanese woman, that's an option.
Who doesn't?
Most people do these days.
Yeah, I've got four that live in my house now, so you know, it wouldn't be too weird.
I mean, and that's just the desk staff. Everything else is automated too. There's little like robots that take your stuff very slowly to your room.
Do they have one of those little bots that just kind of walks around and goes, eat recycled food?
What? No, what's that? What reference am I not getting?
That was Judge Dredd.
Oh, you know, I've never seen the original.
You never saw the Rob Schneider was in the recycled food robot?
I know Rob Schneider was in the film, but I want to see it. I always wanted to see it, but I never,
let's not go too far.
I saw the more important
robot hotel.
Talking about robots.
Robot hotel.
Right. Biometric scanners to get into the rooms. They got to ID your face.
Also, isn't this the same place where somebody assaulted one of the robots and it brought up all these ethical like quandaries of...
That is actually an unrelated story.
Oh, it
but
is?
That is just the nature of Japan right now where robots are so commonplace.
I thought it was at this hotel.
No, it was in front of a department store.
When someone sees a robot, especially probably American tourists, their first thought is, I would imagine, to be to assault it or to, you know...
Yeah. Yeah. It was an argument that brought up certain ethical things, like the guy who created the robot said the robot actually deserved rights, even though there's no artificial intelligence at play. And what's going to happen with the hotel? Well, who knows?
They're going to get human privileges.
And that's all we got for the robot hotel, but there's some really great articles and video and so on of this. We'll link to all that, of course, on this episode's page.
Single rooms are only $60. I might have to stay here when I go to Japan.
Yeah, it is dirt cheap.
We should all go to Japan.
Nagasaki. Do I want to go to Nagasaki?
Why not?
Nagasaki. Why not? I don't. Yeah.
And for $60, you're already going to spend money on a hotel. Might as well be the Robo Hotel. Only problem is it's probably going to be booked up because it's the Robo Hotel. Hello. And it's affordable.
That's very true.
They have robo prostitutes that you can hire?
Coming
sex
soon.
Robot, sex robot, sex robot, sex robot.
What does it want?
These robots are really fucking creepy looking.
Number 10. We're halfway there. Number 10, Bart Kira gets an animated trailer. And we got Doug with us here to talk about it.
Yo.
Bart Kira is Akira done with characters from The Simpsons.
Right.
That's basically the gist of it.
I remember first seeing Bart Kira online and just being like, oh, that's funny, but, you know, they're never going to really finish that. It's like they're never really going to finish the comic because, I mean, Akira, for those of you who don't know, is massive.
Bart Kira was an idea created by artist Ryan Humphrey, and it turned into a whole web thing of people replicating Akira with Simpsons characters, like, page by page, and it was completely scattered at first. You're right. It seemed impossible that anything like
right.
truly coordinated could come from it.
But that was just like paying tribute to the graphic novel. But now to pay tribute to the film, it's ridiculous. Like I didn't even know it existed until the trailer pops up and I'm like, didn't know anyone was even working on it. Play it. And it's exactly what it needs to be. Just the same way that regular Bart Kira is to the comic, this is to the film. And it's such a deep level of nerddom here. Like going from, I mean, you know, American pop culture television, Simpsons mixed with the Japanese manga mixed with the film adaptation. I can't even figure out how many levels.
And it looks like it was released directly to VHS too.
Yeah.
The trailer is over 50 artists replicating the original Japanese Akira trailer shot by shot. So you can see that the art style sort of change a bit between versions, but it's beautiful. It's just beautiful. And what I didn't realize was that last time I really looked into Bart Kira, because I love Bart Kira, but I hadn't been like following it exactly because it was scattered. It was people right. just doing it everywhere. It has actually come together as evidenced by the trailer. A guy named James Harvey is the editor and coordinator for Bart Kira. And if you go to BartKira.com right now, all the separate independent volumes of the manga are being turned into Bart Kira and you can read them all.
No that kidding.
Ridiculous.
Wow.
You know, piece by piece.
Right.
And for all the pieces that are still missing, you can join the Bart Kira movement and complete this for some reason.
I want to know if there's someone out there who's the first exposure to Akira is through Bart Kira. Like, they read Bart Kira, the manga first. And they're like, wait, this is based on something? I thought it was like a weird
Simpsons. And then later
thing.
They see Akira and they're going to be like,
what?
They totally ripped off yeah. Bart Kira.
It's so surreal. It's so strange. And the nuances of all, like, just the Simpsons jokes, just the simple jokes of swapping those characters and the relation
yeah,
between the
they,
Simpsons
yeah,
characters
yeah, yeah, yeah.
and the manga slash film characters. It's crazy. And that's actually time. So, well done.
Yeah.
That was a perfect Bart Kira right there.
Are they going to make a movie? Like the full thing?
We can only hope and pray.
If it keeps going in this direction.
You know, I'm certain that at some point Matt Groening must have commented on it officially. How could he not? It's beautiful, but I haven't seen that he has. Certainly he must have. But, you know, Simpsons these days is highly self-referential. And so if Bart Kira didn't come up within actual new episodes of Simpsons at some point, I would be surprised. Moving on to number 9. Thanks, Doug. Thug. Number 9. We're bringing Jess back. What's up, Jess?
Hey, hey.
Hey, Jess.
We're talking about something that you and Boar, you love to drink it. What is it?
It's true.
It's Soylent.
It's Soylent.
Woo. But it's not just Soylent. It's Soylent 2.0.
That's right.
Which we have to distinguish because 1.0 came out like at least 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2013 was when Soylent debuted.
But 2.0 is revolutionary in that it's now 100% liquid form. When you get it, you don't have to mix it with anything. It's way easier. Before, with Soylent, you had to have a lot of premeditation with, you know, mixing it ahead of time. And I didn't even think it was drinkable for about 2 hours after you mix the stuff up. But Soylent 2.0, I can just go into the fridge, grab one, start chugging away. About a minute and a half later, I am fully filled with nutrients and ready to go.
It's true. And I discovered Soylent on an episode of Nerdy Show. Boar brought them for us and they were delicious, I thought. And so now I drink one every morning and I didn't eat breakfast before. So this is way better than my past life, I guess.
And, you know, I've been talking to a lot of people about Soylent over the past, I don't know, several months.
You
since,
are
since
quite
this came
the
out.
Soylent evangelist.
I am a Soylent evangelist, apparently. And even if I'm just casually talking about it, people take this as some sort of an affront to their lifestyle when I bring it up. I'm serious.
Oh,
I'm drinking it, like, at work, for example. I bring this stuff to work, like, every day. And they're like, oh, hey, what are you doing for lunch, man? And I'm like, well, I'm just going to drink this Soylent. And they're like, really? That's all you're going to do? You shouldn't. What? You need to eat, like, something. But no, I don't. I'm eating way better than you. They don't understand.
You're
saving a lot of money.
You're eating the future.
I am eating the future.
Soylent, it is a milky beverage thing, doesn't contain milk, totally vegan now.
Tastes like cereal milk.
Tastes like cereal milk.
It does.
And it's environmentally friendly. It uses algal oil, which is oil that's made from algae for a lot of the fat content and some of the other nutrients that are involved. So that's one of the things that makes it totally vegan, because in the earlier versions of Soylent, they had to use fish oil.
It's got everything you need for a healthy diet in it. It does maybe have this little controversy about it having more lead than average, but still safe amounts of lead.
I don't think it was lead. I think it was arsenic?
No, couldn't be.
Something.
Anyway, it's safe. FDA approved, right? And it's number 9. So that means it's great.
Yeah, actually,
it definitely doesn't contain people.
No people. And regarding the toxic elements, they have a full disclosure on their website about all that. And the amount of harmful substances is way less than most other things that you're putting in your mouth.
Which is easy to believe.
Very easy to believe.
So Soylent, number 9, the future of food, perhaps. It is definitely among the many futuristic things happening in this strange year that is 2015.
Yeah, for more, check out the episode where we talked about it in length.
Yeah, and you can hear us drink it live and get actual reactions from myself and everybody else who had it for the first time. So as you can probably tell by the landscape of this list so far, our future present is... things are getting really interesting. We've talked a lot on Nerdy Show about how the times are actually changing so that all of our sci-fi realities are starting to sync up to the one we live in some really...
We're at least starting to get crappy versions of the things that we want.
Right. So we've got our fucking like Jetsons pills in the form of Soylent.
And those crappy hoverboards that aren't really hoverboards.
Right. Yeah. and, you know, you might say that you thought the future would be cooler, but there's a lot of cool stuff happening now. It's just a really weird place to live in. So Yacht, one of the nerdiest bands operating beyond the typical nerd music genre that we normally deal with here on Nerdy Show, Claire Evans, the front woman, she's got her hands in all kinds of pies with tech and the future and everything. She recently announced a show she's doing on Vice's television network where she's looking at emerging technologies, even interviewing the AI disembodied head avatar of that woman. You remember that, right? You've seen that.
Maybe. I'm like, which one? The fact that we're wondering which one, you know, I mean, that's the future.
It's an indicator. Yacht's most recent record is called I Thought the Future Would Be Cooler. And we're going to play that title track here, but we're also going to give one of our nerdy superlatives to the video for I Thought the Future Would Be Cooler, which is this year's nerd stuff in a nutshell. It's all the weird tech. It's everything that's happening right now that's the future, but very sideways.
I don't know. They used Soylent 1.0.
Soylent 2.0 was not when they were filming it.
Whatever.
It uses all these modern things as props in
this
video.
The future's already cooler. Somebody should let them know.
They've got selfie sticks. They've got those shitty hoverboards. They've got vape stuff. And it's a really fun video that has little references to Queen and Talking Heads. And the song itself kind of sounds like a Blondie jam. So you should totally check that out. But right now, we're going to cut to the song and play I Thought the Future Would Be Cooler.
I thought the future would be cooler. I thought the future would be cooler, 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 cooler. Scroll.
All right, we're at number 8. We've got John on the line.
Hey.
And we're going to talk about Talos Principle. Now, spoiler alert, this is the highest rated video game on the list. This is it right here. And you may not have heard of this. In fact, a lot of the staff at Nerdy Show were like, what? What is this thing? So, John, why don't you tell us about Talos Principle?
How much am I allowed to spoil about this game?
Well, everybody should probably play it. And I know it's a game that has a plot that has a lot of secrecy to it. Like, discovering what the true story is part of the game. But let's go with broad strokes and whatever you might learn in the first 5 to 10 minutes of the game.
Oh my god, nothing. You will learn almost nothing in the first 5 minutes. This thing's basically like portal styling. I mean, that gives you all you need to know about like the flavor of the game.
Then
like,
it's a first-person puzzle game?
Yeah, and of course it's also screwing with you, right? Like Portal does. So, you know, you're wandering around, you have no idea like what the fuck. You just wake up and you're in like Grecian ruins practically. You just like no idea what the hell happened.
Is it kind of lighthearted and fast-paced too?
No, man, this is like some brooding dark shit.
Okay.
At least that was
described
it
to me as sort of like a portal mashed up with mist. Would you say that that's fair?
In many ways, in the sense that like you're just like, where the fuck am I? What is this? What is any of this? It's mist-like because you're really having to tease out the world. In Portal, you pretty much know roughly enough to get by. You're just trying to escape. But in this, you don't even know who you are or why you are. You just have this voice claiming to be God telling you, go find my sigils, just, you know, whatever, solve these puzzles, bud.
Sounds kind of like how I stumble through life.
Yeah, but so then you find these terminals and you start typing in Linux console commands into it practically, and the next thing you know...
You have to know Bash to play this?
Practically, it would actually help for the first 5 seconds.
This is a nerdy game. It's number 8 on the nerdy list. You gotta know how to program.
Unfortunately, most of the nerdy parts of it I can't even really tell people about, but let's just say it goes incredibly meta. It's got a lot of code stuff. Things are explained in incredibly nerdy game mentality ways.
Can you format the disc?
Practically. I mean, it's not a full emulation, unfortunately. It almost feels like it for like about a couple of minutes. And then whenever you walk up to a terminal, you just sort of quickly do the code and then, you know, it pops up and whatever, and you go about your business. So you don't have to really sort of poke and prod the keys.
But this is a game that has lots of philosophy in it. It questions existence. It has
deep levels of philosophy. Like I said, I literally cannot go into any detail without spoiling everything.
There's certain knowledge that once you learn it, you can't unlearn it. So based on what John's told me about it, it would be very hard for him to start talking about it without unraveling the whole thread when in fact you should play it. What I can say is that it actually did come out last year. It was mid-December, though. So anything in mid-December gets lost in all the end-of-the-year lists. And most of the action and traction that Talos Principle had happened this year, including its release on the PS4 in October. And it was developed by Crow Team, which, weirdly, they're the guys who did Serious Sam.
Doesn't make any sense. It's absolutely ridiculous.
But they built some puzzle stuff based on their Serious Sam 4 engine and were like, whoa, let's hire a writer to make something really completely different from Serious Sam.
Wow. Yeah, Serious Sam is as over the top and action oriented as you can really get.
So yeah, Talos Principle. We're sorry we can't say more about it, but you should go play it.
Follow your own advice.
I got a Steam Link because I'm not so hot at playing PC games because the PC is where I work. So I got one of those things, so now I can play Talos Principle, and also Hotline Miami 2, and also Undertale, and yeah.
Nice.
The expansions are even nuttier.
So if you have played Talos Principle, but you haven't played the expansions, totally do that too. And of course, links to everything that we're talking about are going to be on this episode's page.
It is insane, and goes so meta. Everything's meta. Meta pretty much describes the entire game. Meta nerdy.
Next up, number 7. We've got Brandon here.
You know, whatever.
Transparent aluminum.
Holy shit. Okay, that I don't think would have existed if not for Star Trek. Star Trek 4 specifically. And it was you're a huge Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
But is the first time they actually mentioned that it was transparent aluminum in the fourth movie?
Man, you have got me there because I am not too fluent on the original series.
They don't talk too much about what the materials are, but in that fourth movie, it's like, it's transparent aluminum.
That's my Scotty voice.
From what I've read so far, it looks like that. I didn't go too deep, but it looks like that is true. That
I went a little deep.
In Star Trek 4, The Voyage Home, the comedic Star Trek film.
The best film,
which
yes.
is fucking great. It's transparent. Scotty says
Hello, computer.
A mouse. Or is he like, a keyboard. How quaint. And then just starts typing schematics on a computer that can't possibly have the memory to do that.
So transparent aluminum, basically, it's one of the key ingredients for Starfleet ships.
Yeah.
It's come up in all the respective...
It's all the glass and screens that are like...
Everything that looks like glass
sealed.
Is transparent aluminum right. in Star Trek.
Which sounds like a dumb joke. Like, transparent aluminum, you can see through aluminum, that's preposterous. But for some reason, we can now.
Well, the thing is, like, after that, you know, it's like... A lot of science and technology comes from really cool science fiction stuff. So like, oh, I really want to create that. It's from a video game or from a movie. And they get close, and it's technically, it's not a metal. It's not true transparent aluminum. It's actually an aluminum ceramic hybrid.
Yeah.
So it's got some metal like ions and molecules in there, but it's really more of a ceramic
base. But the important part is that it's transparent and it's still way stronger
almost
than 100%.
Glass. 100%. Yeah. It's stronger. It's like twice as strong as the bulletproof glass we use, and it's half the weight and like...
And it's nowhere near as thick.
Yeah. But the problem is it costs so much more that you're not seeing it everywhere, not a high demand.
As with everything though, eventually they'll...
But unlike,
figure out new ways to do it and new ways to manufacture it.
3D print.
3D print.
I don't think you can because it's a powder that's molded and baked and then
you could do that. You could create a 3D printer just
for making
it. Well,
once we get to the point where we can 3D print on a molecular level,
sure.
Yeah. Which we would call
right
a
now
replicator.
Where we've got, you know, hot plastic and tubes and metal and chocolate.
From what I heard they do, it starts off, like you said, like a ceramic powder and they heat it to a high degree, and then it cools really fast, and then when they polish it, it becomes transparent and tough as hell.
But right now, they're doing it for bulletproof vehicles, mm-hmm. is what the main driving factor is. But in the future, I hope that it's all about spaceships.
Well, they said it can be shaped unlike bulletproof glass, and I don't know why bulletproof glass can't be, but it says this specific material can be shaped into anything, like armor.
Think about how easy it is to shape metal versus how easy it is to shape glass.
Well, they're saying it's kind of like shaping clay almost because the way that it is, you can shape in anything really easily. It's just so much more expensive.
And 3 inches
make.
Or more, and it can stop an armor piercing bullet.
It, like a 50 caliber,
which is insane.
Armor piercing
yeah,
sniper rifle.
That's great.
Oh. Yeah.
So that's the
Navy's working on it and a separate company that's probably better than the Navy.
It's Cermet Corporation. It's actually aluminum oxynitride, and they call it Alon, which is a registered trademark of their corporation.
I'm assuming it stands for aluminum something or other.
But good on you. You must have some nerds working with you. Otherwise, you wouldn't have this transparent aluminum. Because who would think transparent aluminum?
It's all
aluminum?
From Star Trek.
Yeah. All right, number 6. No special guests for this one because I'm the only person in the Nerdy Show crew who can really talk about it.
We're kind of taking your word on this one.
Yeah, you're going to have to, but believe me, I've backed it up with a massive article. Camp Fangamer, number 6, the nerdiest event of the year, easily. Fangamer is a fan organization that sprung from Earthbound, the cult classic Nintendo RPG and the whole Mother trilogy of video games. They're now like kind of involved with all kinds of interesting physical merchandise for games or inspired by games. But they wanted to do something to give back to the Earthbound community that had spawned them, brought them together, created relationships. It's been pretty massive for them. So they created an experiential, interactive convention. It's really not a convention at all, but...
A lot of the stuff that you were describing to me sounded like an alternate reality game the whole weekend.
It was kind of like a weekend-long alternate reality game, yeah. Happened in Tucson, Arizona, in a hotel, but through there, everybody who was there witnessed a playthrough throughout the weekend of Earthbound on stage as a charity thing with a live talk show that was also a live game show, kind of like a Japanese game show, streaming throughout the whole weekend. But during that time, there were characters, there was a narrative, and a massive, massive conclusion. Pokey Minch, the main adversary of the Earthbound games, was there as a character, having co-funded the festivities, trying to put forth the idea that he'd been, you know, slandered, that being painted as the villain was a misunderstanding, and he just wanted to give back to the community, but things go very much out of hand. They really took that hotel and turned it into Eagle Land, the location of Earthbound. I'm talking about like the menus were changed at the hotel restaurant. I'm talking about the water fountains had different facings on them. There were lots of cool indie gamers there. There were lots of cool people there. There were lots of cool panels there. And I published an extensive article as actually the only press representation that they had on site for this thing, chronicling this entire event. Surreal meetings in the middle of the night. The boss fight at the end was like some kind of metal concert almost.
You fought against something?
Kind of, yeah. Pokey emerged in a big plastic bubble and had a gigantic inflatable spider mech thing that sort of like towered over the audience and had these tendrils that it was sort of abstract, but it like went out in the audience and there was thrashing and a live band playing and it was beautiful. It was a truly amazing experience that me summarizing it in 3 minutes will not do justice. We'll forward you to onto the article, but it was an incredible experience. And if you're not familiar with Earthbound, the article does actually contain all the information needed to really get the gist of what this is, why it's important, and all that. But
yeah, even not knowing anything about Earthbound, it seemed like a really impressive event for sure.
Yeah, completely strange. And no one knows that they're going to do another one or what. It was created as kind of a one-time thing, so it could never happen again, but just this one beautiful, beautiful weekend.
It seems like they'd almost have to just try to repeat it or something.
Or switch gears to another game.
Yeah, exactly.
But either way, like it'll never be like this. It was truly incredible and easily one of the nerdiest things, well, that's ever happened to me. So, let alone 2015.
All right, we're in the top five now, and we've got John with us because we're talking about underground virtual reality drone racing, which Brian Clevenger called cyberpunk as hell.
It really is. It's insane. I mean, you have these crazy guys sitting in lawn chairs with like VR goggles on their heads, right? Of course, they're basically just using them to stream the footage from the mini drones, but like they got antennas coming off of them. They got big ol' RC helicopter style remote controls, and they're just racing these things like freaking pod racer through abandoned factories and shit.
I'm really excited. Like, I totally want to try this. It's just the cost to start doing it and finding places to do it and shelling out all the money. I would totally be all over it.
Well, this is happening all over the world. There may be abandoned factories here in Orlando that like have underground drone races happening in them. It's hard to say. They're underground. That's part of the reason they're so cool.
The entire future is just like collapsing down on us in this one point of time.
Now, this isn't just a bunch of hobbyists getting together and doing this for whoever's there. This stuff is actually streamed online for like the good ones anyway. So you can go to these abandoned factories and these guys are flying them based on first person like fighter pilot style perspectives from the VR helmets they're in. So these guys are jacked in. They are the drone flying through all these abandoned facilities and so on. And you as a spectator online can jump around through camera perspectives in the facilities, the camera perspectives of each of the different racers. I mean,
that's insane.
Yeah.
It's like the beginning of Big Hero 6, but for like racing.
Or Big Hero 6 or Real Steel, but completely different because the format's totally different. And what I love about it is that it is underground, that it is happening in abandoned factories, that it is happening with people who maybe not necessarily are even allowed to be where they are.
But I think we need to start going around and asking people, see if we can get into the inner circle with some of these. If there is a local group anyway.
Yeah, we could start sniffing around. I would actually really like that. However, it is actually on the precipice of potentially becoming mainstream. As we mentioned in a past episode of Nerdy Show, the guy who owns the Miami Dolphins recently dropped a cool million on a drone racing league. So actual sports professionals want this to become a real thing.
Maybe we should try to get sponsored. Send your money so we can do this.
Well, we've got to like, John, you haven't built a drone from scratch, have you?
No, I built an entire CNC router from scratch.
Do you want to start building entirely different drones? What's your cool drone racing name?
God, I don't even. You know, it's really. Oh, damn.
Well, that's time.
You built a CNC
router.
Router.
Yeah.
I'd be more impressed if it was a music factory.
I can build you instruments on it.
Don't worry about it. That would make you sweat.
Quick plug for the cool stuff John makes in the CNC router. We'll have links to Illuminated Lion and Fan Art Glassware, where he and Kristen make awesome drinking glasses, etc., with things you might like etched into them. Wink. You know, John, I think you're marathoning more topics this episode than anybody else has.
I'm versatile, maybe.
Well, here we go. It's number four, licensed bionic prosthetics for kids. This is an interesting development this year that actually happened in several stages. First, in January, Enable made a clone trooper-styled prosthetic arm for a 7-year-old kid that was presented to him by the 501st Legion. And then in March, a 7-year-old named Alex was given a bionic 3D-printed Iron Man arm by Robert Downey Jr. There's an awesome video that we'll link to. He was in full Tony Stark mode. He had Stark Industry-like canisters. He lifted them up. There was an arm for him to put on as an Iron Man arm, and then an Iron Man arm for the kid to put on that actually moves the fingers, it lights up, and all that jazz. And then, in October, Open Bionics announced that they've officially partnered with Disney to make low-cost, high-quality, licensed prosthetic robot hands. They've got a Star Wars one, they got a Frozen one, and they've got an Iron Man one, not surprisingly. So this all has happened in the course of a year. And it's gone from being fan creations to officially licensed things. And they're cooler than real hands. You probably shouldn't cut off your arm. But if you did, You replace it with something that looked really cool.
I don't really like what you're advocating here.
It's Deus Ex all over.
I mean, it does look
I didn't ask for this.
It does look really cool, and I would definitely use my robot hand for good, but...
Have fun with your anti-rejection drugs.
Yeah. It's fascinating, though. Like, these are robotic hands. Like, they do open and close. They have an ability of control that I actually don't... I haven't looked into it. I don't understand how it works, even, really.
They can pick up the nerve impulses that are... I believe they just read them through the skin. Like,
yeah.
Contact with the skin.
Wow. The group out of University of Central Florida that's been doing a lot of this work with an organization called Limbitless. Get it? Limitless, but there's kind of like a sort of silent B in there. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Did Tony think of that for him?
But well, maybe. But they do good work. They partnered with this group called OneNote and a collective project to do the Iron Man hand, you know, with Robert Downey Jr. And they recently actually created a wheelchair for a paralyzed vet that he can fully control using his facial muscles. They're doing good work. And these, man, I mean, I don't even care about Frozen, but that Frozen arm, it's amazing. It looks so cool.
I don't think I've seen the Frozen arm. I've seen a lot of the other ones.
Yeah, I don't know about this Frozen arm.
You got glitter. It doesn't have like character faces or something stupid on it. It looks like a really stylish, cool space magician's hand.
Huh.
And I want it to be my hand.
Yeah, I don't know how I saw all the other ones, but somehow I let that one go.
So,
man, I gotta go find that.
That's time. We'll link to where you can see all this stuff.
Did you get it? I worked in Let It Go.
Oh, shit. I haven't seen Frozen, man. I just...
Oh, God damn it.
I don't know, man. I just... They got that
Somebody
snowman.
At home got that joke.
You know, it's weird. The adults who own Frozen that I know, including John and Kristen, they all have copies of Frozen. I was like, it's a cultural zeitgeist. Let me see Frozen. And they're like, no. This has happened with multiple people. Adults without kids won't let you borrow Frozen because they might watch it.
What?
This is a reoccurring problem that no one will let me borrow Frozen.
Are we talking about this? Are you talking about the same?
And you said no.
The same movie that most parents are freaking tired of.
Yeah,
in
but
every
well,
way conceivable.
Well, parents can't loan it because the kids will keep watching it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my problem. And I don't even at this point I don't even want to see it. But I feel like I don't get the jokes. I don't get the jokes, Boar. I don't get the jokes at all. Whatever. Moving on. Number three. There is, in fact, some Star Wars on this list. It's TIE Fighter, an animated short film done by one guy. We're here with Doug.
Yo.
State of the Empire, TIE Fighter. What's up?
I was really impressed by this thing. The amount of detail that this one guy puts into this little short animated film, it looks like professional quality. Like a team of Japanese animators made this.
And it looks like classic anime. Classic, marginally realistic anime.
Is there a term? There's got to be a term like cockpit pornography. I mean, just like the fetishization of just the buttons and like all the sliders. Like, I mean, I'm sure in the Star Wars universe, there's not even this much detail. You know what I'm saying? Like, but
it is like food porn.
But with cockpits like, and all the buttons and screens and the
cockpit
and the heads-up
pornography.
Display.
My brain went straight to, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Yeah.
It's truly amazing. Now, this is a 7-minute long animated short. It was all done by one guy, Paul Johnson, and he did it over the course of 4 years, just weekends on 4 years. And it's not just a tribute to Star Wars, it's also a tribute to one of the greatest Star Wars games ever made, 1994's TIE Fighter.
TIE Fighter, of course. I'd see a TIE Fighter movie done in anime style.
I mean, this guy's got to have turned some heads with this because it is truly breathtaking. It was all him. It wasn't fan-funded or anything. It was just him doing this passion project and I consulting on, you know, various fan boards to get it all right and all that. But I mean, just one dude and really amazing characterization between these Imperial pilots, really cool amounts of detail. And it's a little disturbing to see the Rebels lose so bad, but
not to some fans though.
Like, yeah.
It's about time. It's about time we see the Empire's best.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only 7 minutes. Check it out. If you're a Star Wars fan and you've missed this, I can understand why, because The Force Awakens has pretty much taken up a lot of your dashboard recently, but definitely check this thing out if you haven't already seen it.
I mean, it's number three.
Yeah.
This is so good, it topped the list. So check it out. We're going to call it right here. Take the time in the remainder of our 3-minute allotment here to, well, spend 7 minutes watching this amazing film.
Yeah.
All right, number two. We got Brandon here.
Hi again.
Oh my God, guys, it's number two, but it could easily be number one. It's the most incredible thing I've seen all year. You know what? I'm not even gonna time it. We're just gonna go for it. We're just gonna do this thing. IRL first person shooter on chat roulette.
It's more like a first person shooter that's chat roulette controlled.
It's an action
live action
RPG puzzle first person shooter.
Basically, you're on chat roulette, and all of a sudden
you click through a few dicks,
and then you see a first person perspective.
You get an invite.
It says press start, and you're in. If you were one of the original people to do this, you're in a church. And your guy wakes up, he's like, oh, what do I do?
And basically, you're looking through this guy's helmet, and you're, like, controlling this character, and you tell him, literally, through chat roulette, his actions, like, look left, look right, go over here, find this item. And he does exactly what you tell him to do.
And the level of detail in this is amazing. They have the full, like, working heads-up display for the...
In real time.
Right. Updated in real time. He's got a health bar.
So if he gets hit, someone is taking away the health.
When you pick up a weapon, the weapon appears just as it would if it was a video game. And this is like a Doom Wolfenstein-style first-person shooter. Your guy versus zombies and then eventually some kind of terrible boss monster you gotta fire rockets at.
Think about this, if you die, they disconnect the video. You don't get to try it. Like, if you do something wrong and get killed like a zombie in level one,
and you're
that's
back
it.
To watching dicks on
Yeah, back
chat
to
roulette.
Watching chat roulette dicks.
Now, the first video alone is what got them on the list. But recently, they did a level two.
Level two.
And it took the thing so much further, because in the first it was zombies in a church setting and then a big monster.
It was a small kind of setting. It looked cool. Kind of low budget.
It looks really cool. The first one did. The second one was, like, mind-blowing.
They did it, I think, in one of their backyards or something, they said, but they made a giant church.
Yeah, these guys are from England, and in England, they have tons of churches that are not churches anymore. So they're...
So they could just film them.
Realm Pictures, who created this, their production company is actually in this building. We should add, like, the guy is talking to you the whole time. So you're interacting with, like...
And
the,
he's responding
the first-person
to you.
Character. Like, you're seeing the gestures of his hands. The narrative elements of it, it's all very, just crazily well done.
And he's very good at improvising. They'll just be like, look around for something that like helps your health. And he's like, there's some drugs here. And they're like, inject it. He's like, oh, are you sure? And they're like, yeah. He's like, okay, whatever. And he just does it. And oh, man.
The first one was the zombie thing. The second one was basically like Dead Space and Alien. Or
yeah,
Aliens.
Pretty much.
I just like when they say lines like, get the cross. It works on zombies. He's like, no, they don't.
So the second one was in like a factory, some kind of massive factory. I haven't watched
Huge,
the behind the scenes video
several floors,
yet on it.
And the setting was supposed to be a derelict spaceship, and you're supposed to save the day.
Yeah. And at the end, a giant, like, Pink Floyd-style inflatable of a huge fucking grub.
They have remote-controlled robots, they have holograms, they have sliding doors, and they have websites set up to help you solve some of the in-game.
The door puzzle.
Yeah, there's a door puzzle, and there's a little website above it. It's like, for troubleshooting, go to this website. And you do, and it's a real website that has troubleshooting codes, and, like, it has several pages on the website about, like, different types of doors for your spaceships, and it's really cool.
These guys have outdone themselves. So it's Realm Pictures, and they teamed up with an escape room and treasure hunt company called Red House Mysteries. And, I mean, it's no surprise they're out of the UK, because they do, like, escape room stuff well beyond the scope of what we do in America over there. Like,
it's really hard to describe what this is, you know, with no visuals in a few minutes. So they're really...
You really just need to go watch the video and experience this.
And you can't
play
it. They have to invite you randomly. It's not something you can... Uh-oh, am I wrong?
Here's the thing.
Uh-oh.
Originally, it was all done through chat roulette, the first two levels. Yep. But level three is a whole different story, because they've just launched a Kickstarter and a general purpose crowdfunding campaign for level three at rlfps.com.
But why would anyone do that when they randomly... They can't... Not everyone could play it, because it's in real time, real actors, real people.
Because it's different. This time, they're going to be pooling from the people who are backing them, and those backers who get to do it will be chosen at random. And and it's actually expanding into a narrative with characters and interaction between people, and it's like basically it's going from Wolfenstein jumping to Dead Space, and sounds like it's jumping to Elder Scrolls.
I want Doom.
Or Fallout.
I want Doom.
Oh man!
Like they're actually taking.
They're just going to start wandering around New Zealand.
Like they are actively going to be turning this into an interactive narrative.
How can I play it?
You got to back them.
And then maybe I'll get lucky.
Maybe. I assume
the videos are alone.
I assume there are certain levels of you will definitely get lucky if you pay enough money.
$10,000 you will play and get one life.
No kidding.
You'll get one life.
The production value on this is so good. The whole time I was just like, who is funding this?
It looks like a movie
set. Who is funding these random chat roulette people to play this amazing thing?
And I think the worst part is if you're one of the lucky people like who didn't know this was a thing and that, you know, they pick you and you just play it, you just, if you do something stupid because you're messing around and you die, you'll never play it again. They just cut the video feed and that's it.
Yeah, I imagine some of them were like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah, I love that there were like some girls on a beach playing and he's like, he's bringing up like a holographic projection of like where he should go. And it says like, it says Cargo Bay. And they're like, Cargo Bay? What's that? And he's like, it's not a beach.
Seriously, Realm Pictures, Red House Mysteries, you guys,
they outdid themselves. It's probably the most, one of the coolest things I've seen all year. Probably the coolest thing I've seen all year.
Yeah.
Because reality sucks, and that was amazing. The real shit we discover in real life is like, whatever.
We'll have links to where you can see all this stuff on this episode's page. But remember, rlfps.com, and that's where you can learn how you can get on the action at level 3. There's a lot of detail. There's a whole video on it. I've only scratched the surface.
And if you're not interested, like, watch the video of level 1 and level 2 and then tell me you're not interested.
Whether you play it or not, they will always archive it online into produced videos like they have in the past for everything they're doing in the future, regardless of what happens. So I cannot wait to see what they do next.
And it's, if you get to be one of the people that play it, please record your session. You know, like, yeah, record your
cool.
session.
It'd be cool to see a full one.
Yeah, and like, send it to us so we can watch it. Or just show it online. Yeah, it'd be really awesome.
So that was number 2. Congratulations, guys. It was amazing.
Your reward is in the mail. Your trophy is in the mail. Your Nerdy Show trophy is coming to you right now.
Next up, we have a minor detour before we get to our number 1 nerdy thing of the year. Yes, it's another superlative. This is the Exceptional Geek Award. And for this award, we're going to bring back Doug and Jess. Hey, guys.
Yo.
Hey.
This award goes to astronaut Sam Cristoforetti. Now, why is she an exceptional geek? Good question.
I think being an astronaut alone would qualify you to a certain extent.
It does, most assuredly, to a certain extent.
And then, you know, having nerdy interests, for sure, would throw you way above the threshold.
Yes, you have to take it to the next level.
She took it into the stratosphere.
Yes.
I see what she did there.
Quite literally, she had to bring it from Earth because she tweeted a photo of her wearing a next-gen DS9 Voyager-era Starfleet uniform while sipping on coffee, and in the background, because she's on, you know, she's on the International Space Station by a window, and while the Dragon spacecraft from SpaceX was making its final approach. So there was like several layers of nerdy and geekiness all folded into one picture that she posted to Twitter of all places.
Yeah, and her text was, there's coffee in that nebula. I mean, in that dragon.
There you go. Yeah.
That's straight out of Voyager. She must have been drinking coffee black, because that's 100% Janeway.
Yes, actually, that is 100% Janeway. First of all, she actually happens to not only be a very nerdy astronaut, she's also holds the records for the longest single spaceflight by a woman, which is 199 days, 16 hours, and for the longest uninterrupted spaceflight of a European astronaut. But that doesn't quite do it, because she apparently is quite a Captain Janeway fan. There were two photos she took on Twitter. The one that Jess quoted there was on the approach of the Dragon capsule, which was bringing a space espresso machine.
Space espresso.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, different from regular espresso.
Yeah. And Janeway loves coffee, so while she was wearing her uniform, Sam Cristoforetti sipped the first cup of coffee brewed on the International Space Station.
That's pretty great.
And pretty fitting, because she's Italian, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't replicated, though. That'll be the next hurdle.
Well, it may have tasted like a bad replication, depending on what space espresso is, you know.
She's at least a true fan, because when you go up in outer space, you have to keep track of everything you bring with you. Like, everything has to be weighted. So the fact that she was like, no, I have to bring a Starfleet uniform with me. Like, I don't know what she had to agree to leave behind to justify the weight to bring that. But hats off to her for sure.
Yeah, no, she did actually have to pay attention to what she was bringing. And she happens to be, out of all the years of space missions, the first person to do any kind of cosplay that I know of in space, but a fucking Starfleet
first,
uniform.
First cosplay in space, perhaps?
Perhaps.
You get 7 changes of clothes, and one of those for her is a Starfleet uniform.
So hats off to you, Sam. You are the exceptional geek of 2015. Viva Italia.
Hopefully she gets back to Earth before Voyager would have, because that took a little bit too long for them.
And so that was our final award, but we're not done yet. No, we have our number one nerdy thing of the year. Here we go. The timer is set. 3 minutes. It's time to get Schwifty.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. This year was the second season of Rick and Morty, and it blew the first season out of the water, I think.
I think it completely did, which is saying a lot, because the first season was mind-altering.
So this was perhaps reality altering, goes beyond the mind into the very universe itself.
It went way beyond my mind and it got swifty all over my brain.
Yeah. Okay. So what you did was you took off your pants and your panties and you shit directly on the floor.
All over the floor.
Should we explain about the what the hell we're talking about for anyone who maybe who hasn't seen Rick and Morty? Because you just said take a shit on the floor with no context, like with regards to why this is number one.
If they're not Googling it right now, then I'm disappointed.
Maybe they're in their car.
If you've listened to Nerdy Show lately at all,
we have been talking about
it. We've been referencing this for quite a while.
but no, we should lay down and qualify this. This is our top 20 nerdy things of the year. So Rick and Morty is an amazing animated series on Adult Swim created by Justin Roiland and Dan Harmon. And it is a super surreal sci-fi that takes like all the best, weirdest sci-fi plots and gunks them up with cartoon weirdness.
These are Star Trek level sci-fi ideas that could be, if they were taken serious, they could be Star Trek episodes, like classic episodes. But they instead make them batshit bonkers crazy and hilarious at the same time.
But I think what's great is that it's what would probably happen because shit just goes wrong. And like everything in TV goes right and it's like, oh, we're so happy. But I mean, there's a really distinct possibility in a lot of sci-fi things that it's just going to go batshit crazy.
There are consequences.
And it's awesome. Absolutely.
Lasting consequences.
Yes. Tremendously lasting consequences. I mean, some deep, dark stuff happened in season one. But season two, you'll note that Rick and Morty, when it happened, we enjoyed it, but it didn't even place on our list. But this time, boom, smack dab, number one, Get Swifty is a jam.
It is totally a jam. And they showed us exactly what they had.
Get Swifty is a song in season two, and it has got to be the number one jam of 2015, no doubt. So this is kind of a joint award because, surprise, there is another superlative here, and it is the Nerdy Remix of the Year, which goes to Andromulus, who remixed Get Swifty, and it is the ultimate jam.
In the best way possible. Get Swifty was a jam for sure on the show, but now it's the number one summer jam.
Of all time.
Of all time.
So basically what we're saying here is if all this sounded like complete nonsense to you, you got to check out Rick and Morty. Definitely start with season one, obviously, but get your way to season two.
Start at
two.
The beginning and forgive the pilot episode. It gets better.
It gets better. And check out the amazing comic, which has recently been collected by Zach Gorman, which is totally in the flavor of the show. And we're going to actually, we have a microsode request to talk about Rick and Morty. We're going to devote a whole episode to it and maybe more than a microsode length, if you know what I mean, boys and girls.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, know what I mean?
Yeah. So we're going to take it here. We're going to end this crazy, crazy episode. So we're going to kick it with the Nerdy Remix of the Year, Get Swifty by Andromulus. Check out Rick and Morty. Thanks so much for listening to this crazy list. If you like what you hear, we are a listener-supported network. That means we rely on you to stay alive. To find out how you can do that, just go to nerdyshow.com/support and share this motherfucker if you like what we got. Yo, Andromulus.
Show me what you got.
Give me a beat. Oh man, okay, all right. what you got. When the mother.
Thanks for listening to Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes or like and follow us on SoundCloud. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution can get you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. You can subscribe to Nerdy Show via iTunes and or SoundCloud. Leave a comment, like and share, and follow Nerdy Show on all your favorite social networks. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. If it's geeky, we got it covered. Go Harley!
Number 8.
Didn't you say like number 14?
Dude, I told you it was none of your concern. Okay. Forget no, number 14.
I was really confused. Start over.
It's jumping around. It's all people are doing different numbers.
Yeah, you started,
but he just said.
I was legitimately telling you to forget it. Oh. And you're like, oh, I'm going to improv about it.
You were
going to be hilarious and just ignore it.
I thought you were improvising. Like, none of your concern. I thought
no,
you were being funny.
No.
Oh.
We're running a serious goddamn ship here. We're trying to keep it on track.
I thought you were being hilarious.
I'm going to talk about some nun band. God.
I went into that because I thought you started the whole improv thing.
No!
I was feeding off of what you were doing.
That's why I wanted you to come back to reality and you didn't even come back to the right
me.
Point.
No. Okay. Do over.